there are a lot of resources out there. So I would tell a pastor, don't just stuff it. Reach out, call somebody, talk to somebody, because no matter what we've done, there really is hope and there really is possibility for healing.
Hey, Pastor, welcome. Welcome. Good to have you on board with me today. This is episode 7 of the Coaching for Pastors podcast. Today, we have a great episode for you. The gentleman we're going to talk to today, his name is Keith Davis. Keith is at centerhope.net, centerhope.net. But Keith works with pastoral couples. That's his bread and butter. That is his specialty. He and his wife actually both work with pastoral couples, couples who just want to get their marriage better. They just want to strengthen their relationship, strengthen their marriage, their family. And then other couples who are just in crisis. They're in crisis. They're in burnout. They're in a terrible marital relationship. And he and his wife will work in an intensive way to rescue them, to bring them sometimes back from the brink and give them hope for a healed and restored marriage. So, Pastor, I don't know where you're at today. I don't know if on a scale of 1 to 10, you would say that your marriage is a 2, or maybe it's an 8, maybe it's a 1, maybe it's a 10. You know, maybe for many of us, we'd say, it's a 5. You know, it could be a lot worse, but it could be a lot better. I want you to listen today and be challenged to think that, hey, there's hope. And if I just take action, my marriage can be better. My situation can be better. I can be healthier, and I can be a healthier leader and shepherd in my church. I can be a healthier person in my family and in my community. Man, I know that there are a lot of you that are struggling, because over now almost 34 years of ministry, there have been many times when I've struggled. Sometimes it's been with a little S struggle. Other times it's been with a bold S struggle. And sometimes I've been close to a capital S struggle in marriage, in life, in family. I mean, we all have these ups and downs. You know, you've got mountaintops and you've got valleys in life. And if you haven't had any of those yet, just keep breathing. They're going to come. They're going to come. Sometimes when I was younger, I used to hear stories from other pastors, and I think, oh my goodness, that I'm sure glad that doesn't happen to very many pastors, because it's never happened to me, and it probably doesn't happen to most pastors. And what I didn't understand was I just hadn't lived long enough yet. I wasn't old enough yet, because the older you get, the more stuff you go through. And it's kind of a beautiful thing in life as well, because even though there's pain and there's sorrow, sometimes there's regret, there's struggle. We just have all kinds of issues in life. There's a wisdom and a growth and a depth that we get from them as well. So Keith is a guy that I serve with on a regional team. And I got to meet him a couple years ago, and I have wanted to have him on my podcast and to just talk about what he does with pastors. I hope you find this encouraging and helpful. Keith is just a fantastic guy. In fact, next week I'm going to get to spend a couple days with him and some other pastors, and I'm looking forward to it. So I hope you enjoy this. And again, his website is centerhope.net. And you can contact him there. And I encourage you to do that. I encourage you to do that, because I just hate to see a pastor suffer when there's no need, when there's no need. And the sooner you reach out, the sooner healing and hope and health can come. So here's my conversation with Keith Davis. Keith Davis, thank you for joining us on the podcast today. Welcome.
I'm excited to be here with you, Jeff.
Keith, tell my listeners where you're at and what you're doing.
Well, I am in Colorado Springs, Colorado, beautiful area. And my wife, Kathy, and I are counselors. We work primarily with people in ministry, although often after working with pastors and people on staff, they will send us people in their churches. And our primary focus, it's not all that we do, but our primary focus is an intensive format where we bring a couple out. They stay with us in an apartment that we have, and we go pretty deep into their life story, the things that have shaped them and, you know, helped them develop and become the people they are. And then whether there is trauma or just a couple comes out because, well, they just feel like they want to get in a little bit better shape relationally, we'll dive into that part of their story and begin to look at some tools and some skills and some things that maybe can be adjusted and changed in order to create a healthier relationship between the two of them. And then, of course, that healthier relationship flows out into family, ministry, all the other parts of their lives. So that's kind of a very quick synopsis.
So what percentage of the people that you counsel, Keith, would you say are in full-time ministry?
Probably about 50%. That varies, but just, overall in the last number of years, probably about 50%.
Okay. And a lot of them are pastors and wives.
Yes, primarily pastors and wives, missionary and wives, and then others who are in maybe denominational leadership positions, that type of thing.
So you have them come to your where you live, and you've got it set up there so that there's a place for them to stay as well?
Yes, that's correct. We live in the downtown area of Colorado Springs, which is really a lot of fun. We live in a townhome, and behind our townhome, above our garage, is a separate, fully furnished, full-size apartment. And so the folks stay there. It's furnished with just about anything they need. And that way we'll spend many hours together in our sessions, but they don't have to go back to a hotel or any of that. It's just, just a few yards away, and they have their private space and it's set up very, very well.
And so you'll take couples who are, I would imagine now, on the worst end, ready to divorce, and this is their last shot at it, as well as couples who are happily married and just want to optimize their marriage relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. Sometimes when there has been a particular crisis, maybe adultery, for instance, denominational officials will actually send the couple to us, hoping that we can be a part of the process of restoration and healing the marriage. And ultimately, sometimes that leads to restoration and ministry. And then others who come, maybe they're in transition. It's a new season. Perhaps it's empty nest, or they've just started a family, or they've begun a new ministry. And so in the transition, they feel they want to get some new skills. There's maybe some tension, some stressors. And so we'll deal with that. And then sometimes people, we had one couple who they had just celebrated their 25th anniversary, no particular problems. And they thought, what do we want to do on our anniversary? And the wife had, well, they had known about our ministry. And the wife said, I think we need to go to counseling. He said, well, why? And she said, well, I'm not sure why. I just think it would be a good idea. And they did. And it was, they loved it. They had a great time and learned some new skills and felt like it was the best gift that they could give each other.
Keith, have you seen a difference or a change in what you're doing based on this whole past year with COVID and with racial tensions, economic situations, political upheaval? Has that affected what you do at all?
Only in the sense that people are more aware of the stress, the tension, the exhaustion. Again, the stress levels in everyone's lives have really ramped up. When COVID first shut down everything, many of our couples that had scheduled to come had canceled. They didn't think they would be able to travel or, various health concerns. Almost every empty spot filled up, and we had a pretty full year. And again, many people just coming exhausted, pastors especially. One worship pastor and his wife came, large church, and when COVID hit, of course, their church, being one of the largest in the community, felt like they had kind of a responsibility to get on the air and do video really well. And this guy, very talented, but about the same time that this all hit, he had several of his key worship team technician people resign because of job you know, family, and then people with health issues that couldn't be a part of it. He was working probably 90 hours a week and getting the services online. Sometimes he was up till 2 or 3 in the morning. So this went on for several months. The marriage was falling apart. Finally, the associate pastor recognized that some things were not good, and they talked, and he, the associate, knew of our ministry. They immediately sent them to us. Worked through all of those things, began to reframe their schedule, their way of doing things. They went home, talked to their lead pastor. Everybody agreed to the changes. And a couple months later, they contacted us again and just said how fresh and new everything felt. And even though they were still carrying a huge load, it was completely different. You know, probably some cracks in the foundation of that relationship before all of this hit. But when COVID hit, it just exposed everything even further.
Wow, that's amazing. And now they're in a better spot, and they've got
absolutely
some tools to go back and work with. Yeah, so this has been a tough year, and I know that we're talking to pastors who they're just all over the map in terms of their health, both psychologically, physically, emotionally, their stress level. I'm thinking about pastors that aren't very self-aware, and maybe there's things that are bottling up, but they don't realize it. They're just kind of thinking, oh, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. Maybe they're getting some hints from their husband or wife, and they're just kind of just like ignoring it. What are some things that they should be looking for in their life that would be indicators that, hey, they need to get some help?
Well, first of all, talk to the people closest to them. Now, that's a really hard thing to do. We don't want to hear from our spouse. We don't want to hear from maybe staff members or elders in the church. But if we're not very self-aware, that's the first place we need to go, to talk to people who know us, who are watching us, and listen to what they say. If they are saying, you know, Pastor, you just seem a little more irritated, a little more on edge than usual. Or, maybe a spouse is saying, well, you've been a little angry and frustrated and short with the kids. And those are what I call red flags. If I can think through my own physicality, am I sleeping well? Do I seem like I'm getting up a lot more during the night? I wake up tired. What are the words that I'm using? Am I using the word exhausted or weary, or I'm over this? I'm just so tired. You know, those kinds of negative self-reflecting words. If we're saying that all the time, there's something wrong. But the very first step is to try to get some good feedback from the people around us. If they are good friends, if our spouse is honest, if people are being honest with us, we will hear from them the things that are being reflected and that are showing up in our life.
That is very helpful. So when you work with pastors and wives, what are some of the common maladies that you find going on in a ministry couple that might be somewhat unique? Now, it's not all unique, but somewhat unique to being in ministry. What are the common traps we step into as pastors?
Well, one of the things that does show up a lot is just this idea of burnout. And we've thrown that term around for many, many years now, but It is really definable. It's the kind of thing that when, again, talking about exhaustion or weariness or just feeling like I don't have the passion or the drive that I used to. Now, sometimes with pastors that have been in ministry for a while, we maybe attribute that to age, or we've been in the same church for a long time. But this call to ministry, it really is designed to be something that is vibrant and life-giving, not just to those who we minister to, but to ourselves. If we're looking at this idea of burnout and just being kind of exhausted, then we can kind of unpack that a little bit. We can ask about self-care. Are we really taking care of ourselves? You know, it's interesting, in the Gospels, Jesus, who could do anything and did, he often withdrew. He many times said no. There are times that he could have stayed and been, you know, his calendar would have been booked. But he would look at the disciples and say, you know, we're going to take a hike. Let's go walk to the next village, even though there were crowds right where he was. times that he took naps, times that the disciples couldn't even find him because he was off, you know, being with his Father, enjoying and resting and renewing. If Jesus did that, why would we think we don't need to do that? Now, self-care needs to be something that is refreshing to us and renews us and fills us, not just mind-numbing. We might think, you know, sitting and playing video games for 3 hours is self-care. Probably not. You know, maybe if playing a video game is a great thing, do that for 45 minutes, 30 minutes. But what are we doing to re-energize ourselves? And of course, we want to take a look at things like how we eat, our exercise, again, sleep patterns, one of the most important things that I think most pastors don't really deal with. So that's just kind of an overall thing. Then when I'm working with the couple, we really want to look at what the relationship looks like. Is it healthy? And I love the fact that my wife and I do this together because I start asking questions. We maybe go a certain direction. And then all of a sudden, my wife will have a thought and she'll ask a question. And many times it's that question that just begins to, you know, the floodgates open up and suddenly there's some real honesty and the couple is really sharing, you know, what is truly going on. And we need to get to that level because in ministry, we have learned how to put on a face. We've learned how to present ourselves a certain way. And that's not all bad. Not being in pastoral ministry anymore, I was for many, many years. I walk into church and I don't want to look at my pastor and have him do a whole woe is me, I'm so depressed, I don't even want to talk to you people, and then have him walk off the platform. I mean, we don't bring all of our dirty laundry with us every time we get up on the platform. But we do need to take a look at, you know, is there something going on in the relationship that we're not being honest about, and find a safe place to deal with that.
Yeah.
So those are some of the kinds of things that we would be talking about.
So you talked about the stuff that's so fundamental, elementary, like self-care. Mm-hmm. You talked about sleep and exercise and diet and all those boring things that us pastors, I mean, we're supermen. We've got stuff to do. There's, you know, the alarm bells are going off. We've got to get going. And we've got to serve people. So how often do you see pastors who come in who are missing those fundamentals? Like, is it pretty common for somebody who's not in a good spot that the reason is because somehow they've got off track and the missing fundamentals have stacked up just way too long?
That's absolutely right. Now, pastors are pretty intelligent folks. You know, they've studied, they know how to relate to people. They often have learned how to juggle many, many different kinds of responsibilities, everything from bookkeeping to doing hospice care, you know, for people. I mean, and everything in between. And then teaching and the public ministry. And so we often really are not aware of what's really going on. We try to ask questions and try to dig underneath the surface. It's not that we as pastors are trying to pretend and we're not trying to delude ourselves. It's just that there is so much to do and we keep doing it. If we get to a point where burnout is really taking place, then many pastors do, a friend of mine who is also in a similar ministry, he said, pastors will sometimes find a way to shoot themselves in the foot. In other words, kind of subconsciously sabotage themselves so they don't have to do this thing anymore. That usually gets us to a place where there's some kind of pretty serious activity happening, and it's pretty tragic at that point.
Yeah, I like what you said. I don't like what you said, but I think it's significant. You said there is so much to do and we just keep doing it.
Yes.
And okay, I've been a pastor for 33 years. I can put my hand up and say that's true. That's true. Because sometimes we believe that, well, we don't have any choice.
Yes.
The show must go on and this is what I get paid to do. And there's nobody else that's going to do it. And I just have no choice. But you're right. If we do live that, I have no choice life, for too long, then we're gonna find a choice. We're gonna make a choice that others may not want us to make, and just yes. step away altogether. When you're counseling with, let's not say couples right now, or you're just okay. one of them, and you're trying to help them understand how they have to go right down, like strip it all away and start right at the bottom and kind of lay a new foundation. What are some of the things you have to tell them to really pay attention to? And it's probably the same things, but how do you have them lay that foundation? How do you have them strip away what's there, kind of raise the old structure, and begin to lay a new foundation? Mm-hmm. What's the process of that look like?
Well, first of all, when we ask people to share their story, it usually takes, well, maybe 3 hours for them to really share their full story. We ask questions. We try to take them through, you know, segments of their life. And often where we are as adults is really shaped by how our life developed as children. Many pastors are pretty driven. They're very capable. They have great skills. And somewhere along the line, you know, early on, they kind of learned that doing a good job and working really hard, doing it well, I get a certain kind of affirmation. That begins to shape us. And so being a pastor, that's very public. If we do it well, there's a lot of affirmation. And so it becomes like addictive behavior. As we go through the story and we're unpacking some of these things and we identify what's really happening, we can use terms like, you know, you're addicted to affirmation or people's approval. What are the lies that you're speaking to yourself that force you to keep doing this and performing and making things happen? What are you speaking to yourself? And again, usually by hearing their story, we've discovered some of those lies that developed early on. We've got to get to a point of dissembling, get rid of that lie.
What are some of those lies, Keith? What are a couple of those lies?
Yeah, for instance, many, many, many people in ministry will tell themselves, I'm really not good enough for this. If they really knew who I was, they would leave me. They would go away. They wouldn't be in my church, you know, that type of thing. Well, that's a lie, because we're believing what we think about ourselves and not what God says about us. If I just do a little bit better, if I was just a little better pastor, these people wouldn't leave. They wouldn't criticize me. And so I'm going to just work a little harder. Those kinds of things. And again, out of a person's personal history and story, we begin to identify what those lies are. And then what is the truth we need to speak to ourselves? And I'll often ask a pastor, Jeff, I'll say, hey, what did you preach on last Sunday? For instance, give me a one sentence summary of what you preached on last Sunday, Jeff.
Okay, so let's see. Last Sunday was the last. I'm really bad at this, Keith.
I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah. Okay, so it was the last Sunday in a series. And, oh, okay, good. It took me this long to realize I didn't preach on Sunday. My youth pastor did.
Okay.
But the week before that, we talked about the DNA of our denomination and how it impacts our church.
Okay. Basically, every pastor that I ask that question, they can remember, they can give me exactly what they talked about. But then I'll often ask them, what are you preaching to yourself today? What are the voices in your head saying? What is the message you are speaking to yourself? Now, sometimes it takes a little while for people to identify what that is, but there's a message there. And for many of us, especially if we've allowed ministry to take us into a pattern of unhealthy behavior. And again, I'm not saying necessarily like sexual unhealthy behavior, but just those basic things we talked about: sleeping, eating, exercise, working too much, less than healthy relationship with our spouse. If we are allowing ministry to dictate that, we are speaking a message to ourselves that is not true, not based on truth. And we've got to unpack that and get rid of it and replace it, though, with what is true. What does God say about me?
Okay. So we tell our story. It takes 3 hours. And you, as the counselor, you start to pick out those lies and the foundation of those lies help them to identify them, and then help them to replace those lies with truth. That's kind of clearing off a foundation and beginning to lay a new one?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's good. So let's say that I am in a relationship with my wife that isn't healthy, that I work too much, I'm not honoring her, I'm not giving her the time, and she's basically allowing me to do that because she's just used to it and she's not up for the fight. Yes. And that's just the way it is. And we're just kind of bumping along like that. What would you have to say to that pastor?
Well, again, we'll take some time and go back into what marriage is all about. Now, most pastors know this, they teach it, they've done sermons on it and maybe a marriage seminar or a class, but I'll go back to Genesis and I'll talk about the creative process that God used in creating the human race in his own image. And there's much about the image of God that we could talk about, but in Genesis chapter 2 or chapter 1, where it talks about God saying, let us create man in our image and our likeness, there is that sense of the triune God in that verse. And so the image of God has to do with unity of relationship, oneness of relationship. Then God creates man and says, after this beautiful creative act, he says, oh, this is not good. This state of aloneness is not my perfect plan and not my goodness fully developed, which was, you know, very instructional for us and was always a part of God's plan to do it this way. So God literally pulls Adam into two pieces, reshapes them both, and Adam then discovers that the partner, the mate, the similar companion that he's been looking for is now has been pulled out of it and shaped perfectly by God. And then God says, or Adam speaks, and he says, oh, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother, be united to his wife, the two will become one. And the statement for this reason, we have to figure out, what is he really referring to?
Yeah, tell me that, Keith, because I've looked at that in Ephesians 5, and I've looked at that, and I always ask the question, for what reason? What is the reason that this happens? Go ahead.
That phrase is a literary device, and what it's designed to do is make us look backwards at the story. Go back in the story, because the reason has already been identified. Adam now is suddenly, oh, for this reason, this is why this is happening. Well, from all of my research and looking at this and studying it, the reason is when God says, let us create man in our image, in our likeness, God uses three plural pronouns, identifying himself as the plurality, the Godhead, the Trinity. The oneness of God expressed in three persons. We are not little gods, but there is something of his imaging that is in us that is not very clearly seen when there's a single Adam. When Adam is torn in two and then called to come back together in unity and oneness, there is something of this plurality of humanness that is joined together that looks a little bit like the plurality of our Godhead, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit being one. So when two are one, there is something of the imaging of God in that. And it is out of that oneness. And of course, in the New Testament, we see the oneness on the day of Pentecost, that out of oneness, you know, the gospel began to be shared throughout the world. If husbands and wives can begin to experience oneness again, there is something of God's glory that shows up. So as a pastor, if I'm not moving into oneness with my spouse, there is something dynamically missing, first of all, in my own relationship, but something that God wants to do to show up that never really gets to be identified. It never really shows up. And Genesis gives us two words as Adam says, oh, this is flesh of my flesh and bone of my bone. For this reason, the two will be united together and they will be one flesh. Well, there's two words, the one flesh and united. The one flesh talks about the physical, union. That's easy to understand, the sexual part of the relationship. The united is the Hebrew word davak, and it really has to do with the emotional and spiritual oneness. Just like a man penetrates his wife in order for new life to be birthed, that's when the sperm leaves the body and joins the egg, and pregnancy and new life happens. The same happens when a man penetrates his wife emotionally and spiritually. Something joins together and new life happens, and both husband and wife become the beneficiaries of that life-giving process of a husband and wife being together as one. Now, the next question is, how do we do that? And so we dive into that. Again, depending on the relationship, there's a lot of things that might be discussed. But 90% of the people who come to us, the couples who come to us, will ask, you know, what do you hope to achieve? You know, I'll have them fill out a little form. And somewhere in that response, they're going to say, we need help with communication. 90% of the couples will say that. And the 10% who don't, they'll end up saying, yeah, we don't communicate very well. So it's almost everybody. And it's not that we don't talk. It's not that we, sometimes it'll be, well, we need to talk about we need to deal with our in-laws because something is wrong with it. Well, it's how they talk about in-laws or how they talk about the job or the ministry or whatever. Most of the spiritual and emotional oneness comes through various aspects of communication. And if we are not learning to share ourselves with each other, there never, never will be oneness. And so we'll have to unpack that again, look at some different ways and help them develop some structure. And a lot of people don't really like structure, but everything that God has created has always been built with structure. And so we need to find an appropriate structure to help them actually find intentional times and ways of communicating, not just about negative things, but sharing their heart, their life, their emotion, their spirit with each other.
Well, Keith, you just gave us a great theological seminary prof type of answer. And what I really wanted you to do is I wanted you to bang that guy around. I wanted you to knock him around the room a little bit.
Okay.
And tell him.
I can do that too. That'll take us to Ephesians 5, where it tells the husband to die like Jesus did for the church.
There you go. Well, I loved your answer because you got to the foundation of relationship, which is found in the ontology of the Godhead, mm-hmm. right? Who God is, and he's made us in his image.
Yes.
And so we have that opportunity to have that kind of relationship, and it's hard. I mean, I'm going to admit that it's hard. You would probably admit that even as the expert, you know, there's challenges, mm-hmm. yes. right, in your relationship. Yes. And in the crucible and in the pressure cooker of ministry, it seems as though at times there isn't time to figure it out and to work on yourself and get it right, because you're going, especially if you're growing and going,
yes.
right? You know, if you've got all this stuff going on and you're all that as a pastor or as a church, watch out, because that's when it can be really difficult. And that's when sometimes our spouses or family members or maybe even staff members might not dare say anything because, hey, God's doing a work here. Lives are being changed. And how can we argue against that?
And I go back to the story where Jesus was healing. There were lots of people coming. And the next morning, Peter and the disciples couldn't find Jesus. Everybody from the town had gathered again. They couldn't find him. And Peter's frantic because, I don't know, in my mind, I think Peter is trying to franchise this thing. And he wants to build on the momentum, you know. And they can't find him. Jesus is nowhere. And finally, they find him up in the hills. Like I said, he's been with his father. And Peter says, okay, well, at least you're here now. Everybody's gathered. They're waiting for you. And Jesus says, no, And they just leave to walk to the next village.
And that is why he was sent, right?
Exactly. But he wasn't constantly busy. He wasn't frantic. He didn't just do everything that everybody asked of him. And if Jesus didn't, why do we think we can? And I think saying no is one of the most important things pastors can really learn. And it's one of the most beautiful things, because we need to teach our people to say no and not to let serving in the church or the doing the good things override the first part of our ministry, which is our relationship, especially if we're married, to our spouse. That's my first congregation. If I'm not shepherding my wife well, why would I expect that I can shepherd everybody else well?
Yeah. So you've got a pastor who is in trouble. He's got secrets, doesn't have relationships. His or her relationship with their spouse is not going well. And they get that lie in their head that you first mentioned, that if people really knew me, they would leave and they wouldn't want me to be their pastor, or they wouldn't want to attend my church. And they get isolated. And, you know, let's say COVID maybe has made it even worse. They're more isolated. Maybe they're pilfering from the church coffers.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they're online looking at pornography instead of Logos Bible software.
Yeah. Yep.
Maybe they're involved in financial stuff like gambling, or yes, they're even addicted to painkillers or whatever. The craziest things happen to all of us, because we're all human. You know, where can a pastor like that turn? What would you tell a pastor who just feels like there's just no hope? This has just been going on, and I have long since settled in my mind that there's nothing I can do about it, and I'm just going to just stuff it down under and make pretend it's not affecting my life.
Well, I would have them, I would have you tell them to call me. and I was in that place. Our church was growing. It was dynamic. We had an amazing impact in our community in Southern California, but I was just, I really was burned out, had no idea that that's what I was really feeling, and doing everything and saying yes to everything. And eventually I acted out. And because I didn't, and I was also a district superintendent over a group of churches, so I was kind of the supervisor, and I felt like there was no safe place. And so in my story, I decided suicide was the only option.
Mm.
And thankfully, God truly intervened. I did call a denominational official, and I was surprised at the grace I was shown and a direction. You know, connected us with a counselor. We began to work through the process. I never dreamed I'd be back in ministry, but we were restored back into pastoral ministry after going through the process of healing and restoration and learning new skills and tools. And so, you know, I want to tell pastors that there really is hope, and there are a lot of good resources. I've worked closely with Focus on the Family, and I know the head of their counselors there, and I'm thankful for pastors who will call, and they often will refer them to some really solid folks, you know, ministries and counselors and places that pastors can go. There are a lot of resources out there. So I would tell a pastor, don't just stuff it. Reach out, call somebody, talk to somebody, because no matter what we've done, there really is hope and there really is possibility for healing.
I remember hearing a son of a pastor say after the pastor committed suicide because of hidden sins that were about to become public. I remember he said something to the effect of, what hurts me so much is the thought that my dad thought that we wouldn't love him.
Yes.
Through his sin. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for suicide, and I judge nobody who's in that kind of a situation and the hopelessness and the mental health anguish that's involved. But when the choice is to die and be gone, or face the truth and allow people to walk alongside of you And yeah, maybe it'll be hard. And yeah, maybe other people in your life will have to practice forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Yes. And maybe some of them won't. But what have you found for people when they dump their secrets, when they've been carrying secrets, a secret or secrets with a capital S? What do they experience when they open up and they dump those secrets out? What happens?
It is a cry of freedom. There is so much freedom, and there is so much release to be able to live in a place of light and truth. And I've experienced it. I've seen many, many people experience it. And it's amazing. And it's a place that if we've been in that dark, dark season, it's a place that we don't think exists for us anymore. But it really, really does. And that's
important.
Why Jesus came, to set us free.
Yeah, that's an important point to make, that we do get to that point where we don't think that place exists. Mm-hmm. And generally, how do you see the people around them and those closest to them? What's the process that you see them go through? Because I think that I've seen that one person feels release and another person feels crushed.
Well, especially when the information is first shared. In fact, there's a book that was written years ago by a pastor's wife. Pastor had shared adultery situation, and the name of the book, I think, is something like, I just got hit by a ton of bricks. And so there is for the one who is just finding out that this struggle is deeper, bigger, far ranging than we thought. There is grief, there's loss, there's hurt, there's anger, there's all the things emotionally that a person goes through, often unforgiveness. But most of the time, in my experience working with people in these kinds of situations, most of the time, there's also a true desire to forgive and experience healing together. And that's amazing.
That's what I wanted to hear from you. And I didn't know if I'd hear it because we didn't pre-talk any of this out.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, I think it's important for people to have hope and to know that they will experience that freedom. And even if it's going to hurt the other person, the truth is, you're not going to be able to keep that secret forever.
That's right.
And the longer you keep it, you're just adding weight every day that eventually is going to get dumped on the people in your life.
Yes.
And maybe if you could release it sooner rather than later, it would be just a little bit less crushing.
That's right.
Than it's already going to be. But just to begin that process of healing, and I would imagine that those who get the bricks dumped on them, for them, it may be crushing, but there's probably also a sense where they would say, I knew there was something.
Yes.
And even though it's crushed me, the weight of not knowing and the weight of that dreaded anticipation is gone. At least it's out in the light. And like you said, we can begin the process of healing.
Absolutely. Now we know, and there's a pathway forward.
For pastors that are listening that are struggling, how can they get a hold of you? Are you online? Do you have a website?
Yes. The website is centerhope.net. Centerhope.net.
Well, that's pretty easy. And there's a way to send you an email or contact you there.
Yes. And all of our contact information is on that website.
All right. How about some closing thoughts or some advice you'd like to give to pastors or some hope that we just haven't covered yet?
Every pastor needs somebody that they trust that they can be talking to all the time. It doesn't have to be a counselor. It might be another fellow pastor, although sometimes we're not very honest with each other, so that could be not helpful. Often if it's somebody who has a little more life experience, you know, somebody that's just a little older down the road, a little bit further, but somebody that we can talk to and get truly honest with. And again, if we can develop this pattern early rather than waiting till crisis, wow, what a gift that is to ourselves, our families, our congregations. We need to be talking with people and being really honest. That is the simplest thing I can say, and it's one of the most important things.
And you said it's helpful if they're older. I would imagine that's because they're going to have more empathy because of their life experiences.
Yes. And, you know, a lot of times when we're talking with our buddies that are kind of in the same life stage, we pastors, a lot of us are pretty competitive. We're kind of just sharing the stories that make us feel good, or although that can be a good relationship and it can develop into something really healthy, often it's a little more difficult to go to the deeper places that we need to go. So somebody that's been down the road a little bit usually is a little more helpful. But find somebody.
Keith, you've said a lot of stuff that makes us pastors sound like that we're something less than the holy men of the cloth and women of the cloth that God has ordained and called us to be. And we have to admit that, you know, we are marred and we are scarred and we are fallen people just like the people in our churches.
And I don't think God ever uses anybody else.
Perfect. Yep. He doesn't call the fit. He fits the called, right?
That's right.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Keith, thank you. Thank you much for joining us today. And centerhope.net is the website. And I just want to encourage you, Pastor, if you are about to fall off the cliff, man, don't fall off the cliff. Go to centerhope.net. Keith, do you have resources at that website that if you're not available, that might direct them to something like Focus on the Family? You talked about them.
Not on my website, but if for some reason they would like to be more anonymous or feel uncomfortable connecting with me, the place I send pastors to all the time is Focus on the Family. They have actually referred people to us. They have a lot of other great resources. Again, I know the group of people over there. I've met with them. They really do care for pastors. So it's one of my top go-to places.
Okay, that's helpful. And they're just across town from you, aren't they?
That's right.
All right, that's awesome. Hey, thank you, Keith, for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I love that conversation with Keith Davis. And pastor, man or woman, wherever you are, in whatever situation you're in, I just want to emphasize one thing. We talked about dumping our secrets. We talked about when you finally come clean, you dump your secret, you share with your spouse, your husband, your wife, the situation in your life, what's really going on, the freedom and the relief that can be. Man, I want that for you. If you're carrying a burden, if you're carrying a secret, if you're struggling in an area of your marriage, I mean, whether it's addiction or finances or pornography or whatever it could be, another relationship, there's been too much distance between you and your spouse, whatever that is, man, jump on that thing. Get that thing out in the open. Find healing. Find hope. Connect with other people that will lock arms with you, that will come alongside of you. You know, and if you have nobody to call, man, email me, Jeff@coachingforpastors.org. Jeff@coachingforpastors.org. And I would send you to Keith. I would send you to Keith as well. But there are those of us who would be there for you. Don't drown in your secrets. So take action. Hey, Pastor, it was great to be with you today. I hope that you found encouragement through this episode. I hope that it wasn't just painful for you, but that you found encouragement as well. Because your life and your ministry is so important to God. And your life and your ministry are so important to the kingdom. And the world needs the you that God created. The world needs the you fully alive in your gifts, in your talents, in your love, in your ability to be to people on this planet who God created you to be. And there are some of us around that really care about that for you. And that's what our prayer is for you. So thanks, Pastor, for listening today. We'll see you on the next episode of the Coaching for Pastors podcast.